Radio Prague News.
A former Prague-based Islamic cleric and two of his relatives are reportedly in custody on charges of promoting and financing terrorism. The ruling coalition in Prague City Hall is set to sign and publish their joint agenda on Monday, and Czech tennis player Barbara Strýcová plans to retire after the upcoming Fed Cup in Prague. Those stories and more coming up in a moment. A former Prague-based Islamic cleric who faces charges of supporting terrorism has given up his right to lodge a complaint against his detention and so will remain in custody pending a trial, along with two other suspects. Imam Samer Sheheda could face up to 15 years in prison if convicted on charges of supporting, promoting, and financing terrorism. According to media reports, his brother and his brother's wife are the other two suspects. The Czech intelligence services began investigating them in 2016. Meanwhile, the former Czech Army Chief of Staff, General Petr Pavel, has said that Russia and China pose a greater threat to the security of the Czech Republic than does international terrorism. Speaking at a debate in Prague on Thursday, held by the Cervo Institute, he said that Czech politicians often point to international terrorism as the greatest danger, but few speak of Russian propaganda, information warfare, and hybrid attacks on NATO allies and inspiring members. The ruling Prague coalition, comprised of five parties, is due to sign their joint program statement on Monday. The coalition comprises the civic initiative Praha Sobie, the Pirate Party, and United Forces for Prague, which consists of TOPO 9, the Party of Mayors and Independents, and the Christian Democrats. Their 35-page statement calls for significant new housing construction and transforming Prague into, quote, a multi-layered, self-confident, and successful city, comparable to the likes of Berlin or Barcelona. Apart from that joint statement, the coalition has also agreed to put forward Pirate Party chairman Zdeněk Šib as their candidate for mayor of Prague. In other political news, the leadership of the center-left Social Democrats is meeting on Friday to discuss the impact of the resignation of party first chairman Jiří Zimola. Resigning on Wednesday, he had said that it was impossible to make significant changes in the party given the current power structure. He also spoke of allegedly shady regional operators who latch onto party leadership as if they were parasites. The first chairman post will now remain vacant until the next Congress of the Social Democrats, due to be held in March 2019. Czech tennis player Barbara Strýcová has announced that she will retire from the sport after the upcoming Fed Cup contest against defending U.S. champions in Prague. Strýcová, now 32, won her first Fed Cup when she was only 16. She won again in a doubles team along with Karolina Plíšková. She achieved her highest ranking in the WTA in January 2017, being the world's number 16. And finally, the weather. Saturday should be partly cloudy to overcast throughout the country. Daytime highs should be between 9 and 13 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy. That's the news for now.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, an expert tells us that Prague city centre had become depopulated way before Airbnb. A week of events aims to highlight the space industry in the Czech Republic. And as people mark the centenary of the end of World War I, we look back at the Czechoslovak legions via our reporter's own family story. All that's coming up in today's programme. In recent years, Prague has seen a surge in the number of people offering their rooms and apartments for rent. In fact, every fifth apartment in the downtown area is now rented out via Airbnb or similar services, according to a new study. But experts say fears of city centre depopulation may be exaggerated, as Ruth Frankova reports.
The sharing of private homes in Prague via Airbnb and similar services has in many cases turned into a regular business. According to analysis carried out by the Prague Institute for Planning and Development, only around 20% of such flats involve a paying visitor actually staying with the owner. The remaining 80% are entire flats rented strictly for business. What is more, around one-third of shared accommodation providers in the city own at least two or more flats. Michal Němec of Prague Institute of Planning and Development.
In May this year, there were around 11,500 flats in Prague offered for short-term rent via Airbnb. Most of the flats on offer are in the historical centre of Prague. Overall, only 1.4% of all flats provide accommodation to visitors. But in the central part of the city, it was around 10%, and in the old town, it amounted to 20%.
With around 40% of Airbnb-type properties concentrated in the city centre, apartments for long-term rent are becoming increasingly scarce in Prague, which in turn is driving rents up. Opponents say that the surge in shared accommodation is excluding locals from the city centre and will ultimately lead to its depopulation. But according to Mr. Niemetz, there is no evidence of this.
We don't think that services such as Airbnb can lead to the depopulation of the city centre. This had actually happened even before these services were introduced, and I would say Airbnb is rather a result of these changes. When we look at the offer on Airbnb and on the real estate websites, we can see that in the city centre there are currently more flats for short-term rents than for regular renting. But in the housing estates on the outskirts of Prague, or in the less attractive localities, it is the other way round.
Accommodation providers are required to pay taxes for their earnings, but Prague councillors have long been calling for tougher regulation of shared accommodation services. The new coalition at Prague City Hall has already announced it will consider measures to tackle the problem. Michal Němec again.
The first thing that should be done is to initiate a debate with the home rental platforms and get all the necessary data from them. Based on this information, the city can subsequently introduce regulatory measures, such as limiting the short-term rent to 60 or 90 days. There are all sorts of options, but an initial debate is essential.
Planner Michal Němec, ending that report there by Ruth Frankova. Space enthusiasts from the Czech Republic and beyond are in for a treat. Starting on Saturday, Prague and Brno will host Czech Space Week. It's a 9-day series of events that will bring together scientists, businessmen and government officials active in the area. Tom McEncroe has more.
It is not just the major 8 anniversaries such as 1918 and 1968 that Czechs are commemorating this year. There are in fact 2 anniversaries that mark the establishment of the Czech footprint in space. In 1978, Vladimír Remek, whom you have just heard, became the first Czech man in space travelling aboard the Soviet Soyuz 28. And, a few months later, the first Czech satellite, Magion 1, was launched into the Earth's orbit as well. To commemorate these achievements and boost awareness of the current Czech space research, the Transport Ministry, along with Czech Invest, has declared 2018 as Czech Space Year. The project is set to reach its crescendo for a 9-day period starting from Saturday, which will be known as Czech Space Week, when Prague and Brno will play host to a series of events, as one of the organisers, Kristina Svoborová, explains.
Czech Space Week offers a variety of events throughout the whole next week for both general and expert public, but also for businesses. What we plan to have is a broad program, including conferences, industry days, but also open days at several space-related institutions, such as the Astronomical Institute or GSA Agency, but also cultural events like movie screening or sci-fi movie music concert. And our aim is to bring a bit of space to everyone.
The European Global Navigation Satellite Systems Agency, that Ms. Vobodová mentions, is the EU's institution that runs the Galileo and European Geostationary Navigation Overlay Service, or EGNOS. These offer an alternative to the established American Global Positioning System. Since 2008, the organisation's headquarters are based in Prague's Holešovice district, and the ESA also offers a business incubatory service at which Ms. Vobodová works. She says that tens of Czech companies are currently working on important space projects and that many of them will be featured at Space Week.
We have more than 40 companies which are actively participating in a European Space Agency project, and a lot of them are working for NASA as well. And, for example, batteries for Curiosity rover or a launch pad for Ariane 6 rocket are Czech products. So we are quite good in bringing things upstream, but space technologies are not only about bringing things to outer space. Czech companies are also particularly good in using Earth observation data or navigation. And this is why also the GSA agency is located in here.
That was Kristina Svobodová. She's one of the organizers of Czech Space Week. Now, 100 years ago, the new state of Czechoslovakia was already establishing its institutions. While celebrations were still going on in Prague, about 70,000 Czechs and Slovaks were fighting thousands of kilometers from home in Siberia, attempting to gain control over the Trans-Siberian Railroad. Among them was the great-granduncle of our reporter Vít Pohanka, who prepared the following report.
The carillon on the old town hall in the town of Žďár plays a different tune every hour. Nearby, like in most Czech and Moravian or even Slovak cities, you can find a little plaque commemorating fallen legionnaires. Czechs and Slovaks who died, mostly in Russia, fighting for Czechoslovak independence against Austrian-Hungarian army or the Germans. For me, this particular plaque is a little personal, because one of the 11 names of the natives of Žďár who died in faraway lands is Eduard Pohanka, and he was my great-grand-uncle. For many years, we knew only that he was killed in action somewhere near the Ural Mountains in November 1918. In order to reconstruct the story of my ancestor Eduard, I went to Prague to see Tomáš Jakl of the Military History Institute of the Czech Ministry of Defense.
V Rusku působilo před první světovou válkou v důsledku tedy cesty za prací až 100 000.
Even before the First World War, there were up to 100,000 Czechs and Slovaks in Russia. They came looking for work and business opportunities. Then there was a large Czech farming community, the so-called Volhynian Czechs. They had been invited by the Russian Empire in the 19th century to settle in the fertile lands in what is now western Ukraine. The Czechs in the big cities were mostly businessmen, tradesmen, or skilled professionals. There were Czech teachers of music and even arts. What's interesting is even Tsar Nicholas II admired the Czech sports and gymnastics movement known as Sokol. He decided to introduce their training methods within his own educational reform, so there were quite a few Czech teachers of physical education at Russian schools.
So when the war broke out, these Czechs found themselves in a country that was at war with Austrian-Hungarian Empire, of which their homeland was a part. Thousands of the Czech expats didn't hesitate to take up arms and joined the fight against the Habsburg monarchy, which they saw as an illegitimate oppressor.
V létě 1914 z toho prostředí českých a slovenských krajanů, zejména tedy českých krajanů, vznikla iniciativa na vytvoření dobrovolnické.
Already in the summer of 1914, a volunteer unit was forming from members of the Czech and Slovak community in Russia. The idea was that they would fight side by side with the Russians against Austria and Germany in order to liberate the Czech nation. In August 1914, a Czech battalion was formed and officially named Česká družina, Czech Companions. It was sent to the front in the autumn of that year and was deployed in Galicia.
Původně byla určena ruskou armádou k vlastně propagační a tlumočnické službě po předpokládaném průlomu do českých zemí.
The original idea was that the Czechs would help with war propaganda and as translators, since the Russian command expected to advance quickly into what is now the Czech Republic. That did not happen, and the front more or less stalled, with the armies deadlocked in trench warfare. So the Russians decided to use the Czech volunteers as intelligence agents, basically as scouts. So the Czech units were dispersed with various Russian divisions against the Austrian-Hungarian army.
By joining the Russian army, the Czechs and Slovaks risked literally everything.
Rakousko-uherská armáda se samozřejmě na ty zajaté starodružiníky dívala jakožto na zrádce a popravovala je bez...
The Austrian-Hungarian army naturally considered the Czechs and Slovaks fighting with the Russians as traitors. If captured, the Czechs and Slovaks faced the death penalty. No consideration was given to the fact that some of them were officially Russian subjects. In December 1914, the Austrians captured two such Czechs who were part of a large group that secretly crossed the front and were trying to get to Bohemia. A few of them did manage to get there, but Antonín Gurmela and Josef Miller were publicly hanged on the main square in the town of Wadowice in today's Poland. They were the first Czechs fighting against Austria to be thus punished.
Vlastně sáhla k tomu trestu smrti příslušníkům nebo na příslušnících československých legií.
As the war dragged on, thousands of Czech soldiers who were forced into the Austrian army were being captured by the Russians and became prisoners of war. Many others, sometimes whole units, simply deserted and crossed the front rather than to continue fighting and dying for Austria. Soon they started joining the Russian army. And that was also how my great-grand-uncle Eduard found himself on the Russian side. We do not know exactly when and where he crossed the lines. What we do know was that he was a trained and skilled machinist, and he was certainly welcome, because the Czech prisoners of war were well known for helping to run Russian railroads and factories. However, the Tsarist regime, exhausted by the war, was toppled over by a revolution in February of 1918, and that meant complications for the Czechs in Russian uniform.
Klíčový představitel prozatímní vlády, počátku ministr obrany Kerenský, považoval tu československou...
A key member of the provisional government was Alexander Fyodorovich Kerensky, first as minister of war and later as minister chairman. He considered the Czech legions as a kind of relic from the Tsarist days and did not trust them. However, he changed his mind radically after the Battle of Zborov in July 1917.
Kdy vlastně ruská prozatímní vláda organizovala ruskou letní ofenzívu na východní frontě.
The Russian provisional government organized a summer offensive along the whole eastern front. It was a complete fiasco. The army was undermined by very aggressive and effective communist propaganda, would not fight, and the Russian units were in full retreat. In stark contrast, the Czech soldiers were able to capture three lines of enemy positions near Zborov. The Russian commanders praised them, and that led Kerensky to change his mind. In late summer and early autumn, there was a massive recruitment campaign among the Czech and Slovak prisoners of war. The first division of the Czechoslovak Corps in Russia was formed with two divisions, artillery and other units.
Zbor se dvěma divizemi, s dělostřelectvem a dalšími jednotkami.
Meanwhile, the two leaders of the international Czechoslovak efforts to gain independence arrived in Russia. Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, the future president, and Slovak general Rastislav Štefánik negotiated the transfer of the Czechoslovak legions to the Western Front. But things were to become even more complicated. The Russian communists, or Bolsheviks as they were then known, toppled the provisional government of Kerensky.
Československý sbor na Ukrajině zastihla ta říjnová revoluce, Leninův převrat, který svrhl prozatímní vládu.
The Czechoslovak Corps was still in Ukraine when the Bolshevik revolution took place in October 1917. It was, in fact, a coup d'état organized by Lenin. Masaryk's instructions were clear. The Czechs and Slovaks were to be absolutely neutral and should not take sides in the internal Russian conflict that followed the revolution, and was quickly becoming a full-fledged and ruthless civil war. So, at the beginning of 1918, the Moscow representatives of the Czechoslovak National Council reached an agreement with Josef Stalin, who was then the People's Commissar for Nationalities. The Czechoslovak Corps was to remain neutral, hand over its arms, and leave Russia for Europe via the Trans-Siberian Railroad and Vladivostok. The idea was that they would continue fighting against Germany and Austria on the Western Front in France.
And at this point, I get the first real news about my great-grand-uncle Eduard. He became a shooter with the 6th Battalion of the Czechoslovak Corps. It became clear very soon that the agreements with the Bolsheviks wouldn't last.
Na konci května Trocký rozesílá ten svůj pověstný telegram o tom, kde nařizuje zastřelit každého Čechoslováka, který bude přistižen na magistrále se zbraní v ruce.
At the end of May, Trotsky sent out an order that every Czechoslovak caught on the railroad with a gun was to be shot immediately. The local Soviet authorities started attacking trains with Czechoslovak soldiers, who in turn started to defend themselves and the railroad that was the only possible way to get to the west. Pretty soon, the Czechs had got under control all the major cities along the railroad. Lenin and his commissars were taken by complete surprise. The Czechs were quickly joined by units of Cossacks and other Russian units still fighting Lenin's government, filling the vacuum left by fleeing Bolsheviks.
So Eduard found himself fighting for the control of the Trans-Siberian Railroad near the Ural Mountains in autumn of 1918. And according to written documents that I got from the Military History Institute, it was on the 8th of November that he was killed in action near a small village of Kordon. It isn't much, but at least we know where he's buried and that he died fighting the Bolsheviks. And what is perhaps most important, he didn't give his life in vain. His brothers in arms in the Czechoslovak legions managed to control the Trans-Siberian Railroad and within 2 years evacuated about 70,000 Czechs and Slovaks via Vladivostok to Europe.
Oni velmi dobře věděli, jakým způsobem to tam chodí. Oni to Rusko znali velice podrobně, protože mnozí ještě jako zajatci byli.
They knew Russia very well and had many contacts among local Russian businesses connected with the railroad. Many of them had worked in different cities in previous years as prisoners of war. There had been a shortage of manpower. All the able men had to go to war, and well-trained, qualified and skilled prisoners of war were a godsend.
Klíčové skutečně bylo, že na stranu Čechoslováků se přidali tedy ruští železničáři, se přidali.
The key factor was that the Czechs and Slovaks were joined by local railway employees who saw them as liberators from the dictatorship of the proletariat. So they were not alone. They were greatly helped by the local Russian political and military forces that were trying to stop and reverse the Bolshevik tyranny.
Eduard Pohanka was actually one of the more than 4,000 Czechoslovak legionnaires whose fighting spirit and eventual death in the vast spaces of eastern Russia laid the foundation of the Democratic Czechoslovak Republic and its reputation.
Vlastně získali celosvětovou proslulost, kterou si dnes v podstatě ani neuvědomujeme.
They really won world recognition. It is no exaggeration. You must remember that in the spring of 1918, the Western powers were getting only bad news. Lenin had signed a separate peace with Germany and Austria. That gave the Germans advantage on the Western Front, and they started an offensive that seemed for a while unstoppable. And all of a sudden, there was news that some small army of Czechoslovakia, a country no one had heard of until then, was in control of Siberia, an area three times the size of Europe.
Souběžně tedy ta německá ofenzíva je zastavena a spojenci přecházejí v létě 1918 do ofenzívy, která končí.
It coincided with a reversal on the Western Front, where the Allies finally took over the initiative, and it was becoming clear that Germany had exhausted its last strength during the spring offensive. This Czechoslovak contribution to the common victory of the Western democracies over Germany is often forgotten, even though it was and is very significant.
Zcela zapomenut a přestože byl tedy a je velmi veliký.
Says Tomáš Jakl of the Military History Institute. The Czechoslovak legions were evacuated from Russia until the spring of 1920. Some sailed from Vladivostok to the American west coast, then went by rail to the east coast, and again sailed across the Atlantic to Europe. But the majority went around South Asia and Suez Canal to the Mediterranean and then to the Italian port of Trieste. Josef Charvat was on board of a ship called America. Throughout the epic journey, he kept a personal journal that was later published. Here is a short emotional excerpt from its last pages.
So we happily reached this last port on our long journey. We have permission to anchor at the part of the port where our transports disembark and are greeted by the Guard of Honor in Russian and Italian uniforms. Our two bands are playing the national anthem. There are many guests, both civilian and military, coming to the ship. Our boys surround them, hungry for news from our homeland. So tomorrow it will be goodbye to you, America. You brought us, not very comfortably, but safely across the seas around half the world. Surely all of us will remember you for the rest of our days. And now we go home, at last.
Eduard Pohanka, my great-grand-uncle, didn't make it back to his native Žďár, but together with thousands of others, he left us, his descendants, a proud legacy. The plaque on the main square of this small town reminds us that his sacrifice mustn't be forgotten. From Žďár and Prague, Vít Pohanka, Radio Prague.
That report was by Vít Pohanka, and that's all we have time for right now on Radio Prague. You can, of course, contact us by email at english@radio.cz, or you'll find us on Twitter or on Facebook. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening, folks, and do please join us again soon.